Hello, hello. Welcome to the Black Doula Podcast. I'm in a weird place right now with like Black Doula Podcast. Like really, I've been really using my name more. It's like I'm still orienting to things, but I'm so happy to have you here. You are a very like special person to me in the ways that you think, in the ways that you exist, and just the ways that we just met for like a work thing. And then I'm like, do you be friends? So can you please introduce yourself and tell us how you're feeling today?
Of course. So thank you so much for having me. My name is Erica Hart. My pronouns are she and they. I'm a Black queer non-binary femme that lives in Brooklyn with my dog and my partner. Yeah, I'm also a breast cancer survivor, so you may or may not have seen me topless on the internet. And for work, for paid work, I teach sexuality education with a focus on gender and race and racism. And how do I feel today? I feel happy that it's the weekend, happy it's Friday. A little tired because I know my to-do list is still long for it to be a Friday. So that's where I'm at.
So I was thinking about what we're going to talk about today. I was thinking about like what I feel called to. And we checked in beforehand to be like, is that the vibe? Like, what's going on? And so the vibe that I'm feeling today and that you agree to is really a conversation about like Black liberation. And I say Black liberation very specifically, right? Because there's liberation. Okay. It's general, like we all deserve to feel that way, to be in that. But I also think that Black liberation, of course, is its own very specific thing.
Yeah.
And I think like me and you, I think we connect in very similar ways. Even like when you were describing yourself, like I'm a Black non-binary femme. I'm like, yes, hello. Yes, just give it to me. But also, I know that you are a fucking boss ass bitch, right? So because of that, there's been a lot of things that I feel like I can talk to you about. And I feel like also your perspective is always from the space of like Black liberation being the focus.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm. So I really just wanted to like get into a conversation with you about liberation, but also like the many hats that we hold as Black femmes in this space, the many aspects of like just being a full person. Mm-hmm. Right. And what does that mean? What does it look like? And just, yeah, fucking Black pleasure, Black whatever, like wherever we go with this.
Yeah.
So I guess like starting off the conversation is like, when you think of Black liberation, what do you think of? Like, what do you see?
When I think of Black liberation, I think about the end of white supremacy. I think about the end of systems of oppression. I think about Black people having not just access to, but just actually being able to be taken care of by medical systems, and the end of white supremacy would end medical racism. But also whatever structure came out of that afterwards would also be a care mechanism that centered Black people, right? And that Black people and Indigenous practices would be at the forefront of whatever that looked like. So when I also think about Black liberation as a mentality as well, like, because sometimes I have conversations about Black liberation of like, not everybody has the same view of what Black liberation is amongst Black people, right? There's a different view. Some Black people feel like it means that you're become a billionaire. They think that's Black liberation. Some people believe that, you know, it's an interrogation of inherited thought. Some people believe that it's becoming tenured at an academic institution. Whatever it might be, I think, I don't know that we'll ever really come onto one accord with the presence of capitalism, with the presence of white supremacy dangling in our faces like it's something to attain, right? So I wonder, I'm questioning what do I think about Black liberation, but also thinking how that interacts with other Black people's view of Black liberation, and how then do we achieve it if we all have different views, is my thought. But truly, it would, for me, from my standpoint, it would be just our freedom, like the freedom from like the shackles of believing that we aren't good enough, the trepidation that we have in being in white institutions, whether it be medical to academic, no more literally prisons completely go away. Because they also act directly in our oppression. Yeah, I mean, it just looks like a whole new world. It's not just a framework. It's not just a way of thinking. It's not just a theory, but actually an uprooting of our systems as we know it.
Yes. All of that. All of that. And I'm like thinking, right? Like, it's important. Like, I mean, some of the things you said was is important, but like that part around like liberation looks different for different people, even amongst Black people, right? Mm-hmm. It's like everyone has a different idea. Like,
yeah.
And it's based on what you've been around, what you've seen, what you've experienced, what feels like joy to you, what feels like trauma to you. Like, all these things are incorporated in that idea of my liberation maybe looking different from yours. But even still, like having the ability to hold space for what that liberation looks like for the next Black person next to me, right?
Yeah.
And so like with that, it's like for you, what has been like just in this like current space that you're in right now, what feels like liberation to you in the ways that you're currently existing? And like, what ways are you not feeling like that vibe just yet? Is it like the systems that you're in, but you're feeling personally liberated in your space? Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's levels to this liberation shit. And so where kind of does it speak to you and where is it not?
I feel like it all intersects. I don't think that I can feel liberated if I constantly, for example, I have a bill sitting on the table right now, don't come for me, from a major state department. I won't say which one, but a major state department. It's from a couple of years ago. And I am just, I've been trying to call this particular state department and to no avail, they're not answering the phone, da, da, da. I just feel like I'm being targeted because of who I am. And I know that I am, right? The ultra wealthy do not have to deal with this state department. So, so it is frustrating that although I may be feeling good in my body, like a freedom from, you know, particular health concerns or freedom from thoughts about my body in particularly damaging ways, I'm still looking at this bill like that is really sending me into a major frustration because I don't see any sort of way out other than just pay the shit. And I don't think the bill is accurate, right? But I don't think that there's also a way for me to address it either. So and I'm just using that as an example, but the presence of that then impact me, my life. And that's its purpose, you know, like it's supposed to be a disruption. So I think, I mean, I feel good. Like, how do I feel my body? I feel good in my body. I feel happy with the things, where things are going, like in my job, work, whatever. But there's still the looming presence of all shit that we have to navigate, even in the work that we do, right? Like, there's always this is always so much. Like, there's always Ebony's mom says, if it's not one thing, it's another. And truly, like that is how I feel, right? Like, that's how the absence of liberation shows up for Black people. You know, like, if it's not one thing, it's another. Always having to sort through things.
Yeah, I feel you. Because I definitely, like, you know, like, one, I'm an anxious bitch, right? So,
same.
And, you know, I think what's really interesting, too, people's perception of us, right, is that, and I can assume this, and I think I'd be correct, but I feel like a lot of people's perception of you is that you're, like, a liberated Black femme doing the things, moving how you want to move through life, so on and so forth. And I think people feel the same way about me, right? And in many ways, right, I'm very, like you said, I feel good about waking up and like doing what I love to do and like, you know, all these things or whatever. And I'm like, I feel grateful and I'm in gratitude because I also know where I have been, where like, you know, when I wasn't working for myself and I was in corporate America and like people hated me for getting to know myself and expressing that. And like, you know, all those things, right? And so like, I you know, I show gratitude for that. However, even with this, like, you know, liberation, if you will, or this freedom that I have gained, and even some like access to things, right? And like, whatever, there's still this anxiety that comes with, it's like the liberation or the freedom has come with the cost of other things, or like fear, you know what I'm saying? Like fear of other things, or like other things being present in my life because I am aiming to live in my Black liberated body, right? And so like, it's like this aspect of like how people view us, right? It's like, oh, I love Sabia because she's so free. I love Erica because the fuck Erica's out there chest out doing what they do, doing the work that they want to say, saying what they want to say and how they feel in these spaces. But I don't always think that people understand what that comes with.
Yeah, no one wants to see a liberated Black person.
Period.
Especially a Black femme living in their truth. They just want to see us down and out. That is all that they're interested in. And they want to see us down and out, but then they also want to treat us like mythical, magical creatures in their imagination, right? That don't have anything going on so they can continue to harm us and victimize themselves. Like, that is the work of bell hooks. That's what she talks about in What White Feminism Does, right? Like, mm-hmm. this idea that, you know, I get to say, oh, you know, Erica and Sabia are so powerful and they're just so amazing. And wow, I could never be like them. Only to treat us like shit and have us not say anything back or not fight back or not say, you know, that really hurt my feelings or not show up as human. Because when you put somebody on a pedestal, they can't be human, right? They can't mm-hmm. actually push back away from that because you've put them there and it's actually oppressive to put them there. And it's intentional to put them mm-hmm. there so you can make yourself out to have, you know, some sort of victimhood and then be victimized by that person, which is where we get, you know, angry Black woman stereotypes, so on and so forth. Always, it's always a fight against who is free. Our systems don't want Black people to be free at all. Like, yes. even from the ways in which Black Panthers were creating grocery stores and, you know, trying to, you know, create community spaces just for Black people. No, like, that's mm-hmm. a problem. Y'all are violent. You have guns. Who the fuck doesn't have guns in this country? You know what I mean? Like, what are you talking about? Like, there's a whole push to this day to have guns, right? So why was it such a threat when Black people had guns? Well, you're not interested in the liberation of Black people or Black people protecting themselves. You want them to be a target. And that is like a very blatant example, but that, I mean, and the examples of that blatantly show up all the time, but also how it shows up just socially without a weapon. Right? The ways, the words that people use, how they target, intentionally target and push out Black people from literally any space. It doesn't have to be just workspace, club, mm-hmm. 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 a fucking community center, right? Whatever. There's always some way to do that because that's just how our systems are designed. And our yes. systems show up in everything. I think people think, oh, it's just the medical industrial complex. It doesn't show up elsewhere. Yes, it does. It's called ableism. Yes, it does. Do you know what I mean? It shows up in our brains. It shows up interpersonally. It shows up institutionally. It shows up many ways. Like, and it's important to acknowledge that. Yeah.
This is that part, right? Like, all of that. And I think, like, the thing that I'm learning, right, and like you tell me like how this fits for you, is like I see myself as a person I've always been, right? Mm-hmm. I've grown in different ways. I've become more secure in different ways. I've expanded in different ways. I've learned things. I've experienced more, whatever, right? But I'm me. I'm still the me I was when 5 years ago. I was the me I was when, like, I'm me. There's growth and stuff in that. But one of the things that I realized, it definitely is, I said it on live and I was talking to my mentor, Michelle, and I was like, I'm grieving the way that people used to see me and how they see me now. Mm-hmm. Because it feels like in some instances and in different relationships, different places that I've been in, mm-hmm. that pedestal thing has happened mm-hmm. without mm-hmm. my permission or without my knowledge.
Without your consent. Yep.
Without my consent, right? And so even though I'm like, oh, can we, da, 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 like, I'm still whatever, I ain't getting that same shit back. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, wait, what happened? I thought we were, oh, no, we're not, right? Mm-hmm. And but then I also realized that, like, that has also, the more free that I have been becoming, right, as a Black femme in this space, doing what I do, whatever the case is, the more that viewing me differently has become more present. So, like, as I felt more liberated in the way that I exist, I've been feeling more, you know, in my own power. I've been deconstructing the thoughts about, you know, shit that gets set, you know, built in your head, and you deconstruct that and feel how you want to feel. Things around me or people, relationships or whatever has shifted. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, damn, it's like the more free that I've become in my personal journey it's been a shift of how people see me. And then I'm unaware of that. And now we're in some type of weird space. And I'm like, huh?
Yeah.
What's happening? But I'm like, but I thought we all were seeking liberation and mm-hmm. we all were understanding that I'm on that path as a person and you are too, or whatever the case is. I'm like, damn, like, is it like the Black liberation that is causing a couple? It seems like there's a discomfort mm-hmm. there mm-hmm. that is sometimes surprising to me. Also just like hurtful. Mm-hmm. And it's like, damn. And it makes me like, I was just talking to my mentor, Michelle, who I've also done a podcast with. And Michelle told me, because they're writing a foreword to my book. They're in my book. They're in my life. They're whatever. And they were like, the thing is, Sabia, like, you can't go backwards. And I was like, yo, that's literally what I've been feeling. I was like, mm-hmm. I've been having thoughts like, what if I go backwards? What if I could get back to the place where people, when I was struggling and I was this and people were so receptive and relationships were different. And Michelle was like, no, you can't go backwards. So mm-hmm. you have to be in what you're in right now. And people, places, whatever, they're going to be, they're going to change, they're going to shift, but you have to keep going towards a more free place regardless. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, okay, this is the task. This is liberation. This is what mm-hmm. it looks like. This is what I am. This is the journey. This is probably the part of the journey I wasn't expecting.
Okay.
Because I not in my head, like I don't live in a utopia in my head, like, oh my gosh, everyone's going to be so happy as I go through my liberation practices and, you know, like whatever it is. I know that. But I'm just like, I just wasn't expecting this part.
Yeah. I mean, it reminds me, I just had a friendship breakup with somebody I was friends with for a very long time. And if you would have said, you know, y'all are probably not going to be friends towards the end of 2022, I would have looked at you and been like, what are you talking about? Like, there's no way. But there was already signs that this person wasn't truly interested in me, right? And how I was showing up and how I continue to grow and expand. Make comments like, you are being asked to model because of your double mastectomy. That's like it. Like, you're not being asked to model for no other reason. And things like that. Like, you know, and when they said that, it was like, 2 years ago or so. So there was probably mm-hmm. some imposter syndrome that I was working through that I didn't sure. just block that and not be friends with them anymore. It was something sure. that I was dealing with. But then I came to realize like, oh, the only thing that's really showing up here, because then I started seeing other examples of it, is just jealousy. I don't believe in that. But the gag is that everybody doesn't want you to win, right? And everybody is waiting and watching. Some people watching. And this is like advice from my mentor is to, you know, be a little bit more personal or remove some of your personal stuff from online because people are waiting and watching and plotting for you, people you don't even know, for you to fail, right? And get mm-hmm. excited when you fail. So that I think is something to keep in mind. And my anxiety is, you know, anxiety girls, like I already have trust issues. So mm-hmm. you know, to be so trusting of the world and of people and to forget, you know, I think that that's like the inner child in me, to forget that people have their own motives and they have their own ways that they perceive you. And that oftentimes it may not be consistent with how you perceive the relationship or how you perceive how they show up for you or not. Right. And I think that has been a hard lesson in a conversation of Black liberation, but because I think in Black liberation, we have very healthy relationships where we can communicate what's there for us without, you know, fear of abandonment and whatever it might be, whatever the fear is that you keep these relationships around and don't actually be straight up about how you feel. And that goes for me too. So that's just you talking about that made me think of how even in your close-knit relationships, people will turn on you just because they don't like what you have or they don't like how you're showing up. They don't like that you are happy, period.
I think like a lot of times, like especially with Black femmes and Black people, sometimes mm-hmm. I feel like regardless of what the other person's, you know, race is or whatever, like there's a relationship with struggle. People like they fuck with you because there's a piece of struggle that's there. That feels like, okay, we can do this. We can be in friendship, like, or we can mm-hmm. be in relationship because I'm helping you to not struggle, or mm-hmm. where, you know, it's like something there that has to, it's like this connection to Black femmes and just struggle. And when that struggle, I feel like is missing or becomes different or it shifts. Cause you know, like the struggles that I had 4 or 5 years ago are not the struggles I have now, but it's still there, right? Like still mm-hmm. working through shit. But when people can't see it, right? When people can't understand it, or they don't, it feels like it's an absence of that. It feels like it becomes a shift. Mm-hmm. And like, and so I often think about like, well, aiming to be supportive in Black liberation, and not just like the conscious thoughts, but the subconscious work that goes into actually being supportive of that. Mm-hmm. I often realize that for some people, they have done the conscious work, right? And know the things to say, and know the things to be, and, you know, just like in BADT, right? Like my students, you know, obviously BADT was built off of like my, you know, way of existing, and like, you know, let's talk about racism, let's talk about this, let's da da da, let's put this shit out there. Mm-hmm. And I told my BADT students recently, I was like, just because you're here doesn't make you anti-racist or whatever you want to call it.
Okay.
Don't think because you're here, this is now giving you the award for the most anti-racist, whatever, blah, yeah. blah, blah. Like, no, these are things that are still going to be existing in your body, present in the ways that you do things. It's something that you're going to always have to be working on consciously and subconsciously. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's the same thing with Black liberation, where people sometimes feel like they are supporting it and that they're, you know, with it. But like one of the things I was like talking to one of my people about, I was like, sometimes it feels like trust Black women until.
Okay.
Trust Black women until. And I think that trust Black women is like when we're in the struggle, when it's so heavy, mm-hmm. when it's da da da, right? When we're in crisis, mm-hmm. right? Trust Black women. But if a Black woman or Black femme is showing up more settled in themselves, mm-hmm. happier, doing what they love to do, being more secure, whether it's financially, mentally, whatever the case is, mm-hmm. that until starts to come in place. Yep. And it's like,
100%. I just want to see you suffer. That's it. Even the trust Black women, like that idea came out of, like you said, it came out of suffering, mm-hmm. right? It came out of advocacy. It came out of white people wanting a fucking slogan. Let's just be straight up. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And it's true. There's nothing else I can add to that. Like, it really is trust Black women, trust Black femmes until, but it really, at the end of the day, there is no trust of Black femme, period. Right. It's just not even there. It's just a slogan, right? It's just something to say, right? It's not mm-hmm. actually something to take heed of or to pay attention or consider or critique or, you know, actually sit and read the works of, you know, revolutionary Black femmes and what they've already contributed. It's just a thing to say. I'm like, oh yeah, I listen to Black films. Like, no, you don't.
Yeah, that, I don't know why that's making me laugh so much, but yes, because I guess because I hear it so much.
I love talk. But if a Black film is in your face telling you what you need to do and what you have to do, what I've learned from working in corporate America, nonprofits, even working for myself, is white people do not like to be told what to do by a Black person, especially a Black film. They fucking hate it. They hate it. And usually will push up against it at some point. And as a professor, I have dealt with that so much of like, and I have to even embed it in my group norms when I go to teach. It's like, you're going to relate to me like, one, I don't know what I'm talking about. Like, you don't trust what I'm talking about, but also that you know more than me and that you know better. Right. Mm. And you don't. That's why you're in my class. You know what I mean? Like, this is obviously, we're going to create a space that's not oppressive and everybody gets to contribute to this conversation. And what you bring to the conversation is most of the time valuable, but that doesn't mean that you get to shit on what I'm saying, right? Mm-hmm. And constantly come up against what I'm saying. And I find that across the board, Black femmes, that is how we are discarded. It's just another way that we're discarded. And quite frankly, it's psychological warfare. You know, like, mm-hmm. and you know, I mean, again, the consistencies of what happens within systems that show up interpersonally. Black femmes are not believed when they go to the hospital when they're pregnant. Mm-hmm. If they are a Black femme, right? Black people in general, just want to be inclusive of all genders. But mm-hmm. Black femmes in particular are not believed if they have, you know, pushed a whole baby out or if they're in pain. So if that's happening in that space, why do people think it's not going to happen over here? Trust Black femmes is bullshit. Why are Black people still dying in medical systems if you trust Black films? Right? Also,
even in other spaces, why? I mean, I can assume, like, I don't know the most about breast cancer, right? But I feel like I've been in a few spaces, right? But I feel like that's also the same thing where, like, Black femmes are going in and saying, hey, something's not right. I'm concerned about this. I'm da-da-da-da. And people are like, maybe this, da-da-da, whatever. And then by the time it's found out, it's at a level that it's going to be harder to treat.
It's across the board. Any chronic illness and disability, you could go to the doctor for a cold and they'll disregard it, right? Mm-hmm. Even with COVID, like, I find that the large number of COVID diagnoses and the fatalities of COVID had a lot to do with doctors not believing people, right? And what they were dealing with and ignoring it for a very long time because COVID was already an issue before it hit the news, right? That was already a thing. So I just feel like it had a lot to do with medical systems not really believing folks and it just getting worse.
It's rampant. Because I even think about the educational system, you know, obviously that is your space that you're in. And like one of the things that, like, you know, people like to throw around is like Black women are the most educated group and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, okay, I know a lot of people, Black femmes specifically, who have been in the educational space and, you know, they get their degrees, their perception again is the pedestal, like they're a professor, they're this, they're that. But I'm like, when you actually talk to them, the trauma that they've had to go through to get to that spot usually creates that same type of conversation of, we don't really trust Black femmes. We don't really trust them to know, hey, this environment is not safe. We don't trust them to know these things. And so, like, we're just constantly, as Black femmes in particular, like, pushing and moving through these systems and, like, aiming to do the things because we want to do the things. We have a movement. We have a mission. We have this. Consistently just, like, traumatic to get to the space. But then it's, like, it's so interesting to me because moving through that trauma, whether it's, like, you know, ourselves as business owners, you being a professor, like all these spaces, it's like when people see our social media or whatever the case is, all they see is liberation. Like, they're just like, Erica is the most like liberated, whatever person. And I'm like, but what did Erica have to do to get there? Right? What did Erica have to move through to get to these spaces? And also, what is Erica still dealing with to maintain the level of freedom that they do have?
Okay. It's a great question. Everything. And it doesn't end.
And it's like, you get to that point of like, you know, like I said, like we were saying from the beginning, like waking up and feeling good about my life, I can recognize the privileges that I have and the things that I have grown into and the opportunities that are in front of me. But I just often, and maybe it's like, I mean, I think I speak to it, but I don't think people, because of that pedestal action or whatever that people have going on, that they just don't, they don't see it. They don't understand it. Maybe they don't want to see it. Like, I'm not really sure, but I'm just
You're
like,
not human to them. That's the thing that has to be, unfortunately, understood. It's like, you are not human to them. The same Ebony tells me all the time, like, just because you talk about racial and social justice and you have a, you know, expert understanding of those things and teach it all the time does not mean it's not happening to you in the space that you're teaching it before you get there, on your way there, what, in every way, right? It's still happening, right? It's still showing up because it's still present. So there's no way to escape people relating to us like we don't matter. And that is what, that's the depths of it, unfortunately. And that's the work that non-Black and white folks and Black people have to do, because Black people also can be anti-Black, you know, to really undo that thinking. And sometimes it's not present, right? Sometimes they don't know because they've just been living in it, but that's not an excuse, right? It's important to just understand that you've been conditioned to believe that Black people don't matter. It's going to show up for you. Like, it's going to show up on a regular basis, just like the trauma of navigating a white supremacist world shows up for me on a regular basis, right? It shows up for you, right? And how are you going to deal with that?
So how do you, and I feel like I probably possibly know your answer to this.
Yes.
Possibly. But I'm going to ask it anyway, because I know I always have something to learn. So in those spaces, right, because I think speaking specifically to spaces that we inhabit heavily, which is like social justice spaces, activism spaces, like, you know, people that are in the vibe of that. How do we name, or how have you in the past, if you will, or presently, how do you name, like, even in those spaces when anti-Blackness is happening?
The only way to name it is to name it, is to call it out. Like, there's no other way to do that. Like, a lot of times people are like, well, I need evidence and I need backing up. And there's a really good tweet that's like, if there was a lot of spreadsheets and a lot of data that really broke down, you know, the impacts of slavery and how much it was happening, would not have ended slavery, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you don't need all of this evidence, right? And oftentimes the piling up of evidence is just more labor on the most harmed, right? Mm-hmm. So you just have to call it out. Like, it just has to be named as whatever is anti-Black is anti-Black. And that's it. Like, and now what are we going to do about it? What are the consequences in that particular institution, in that particular friend group, in that particular relationship, whatever it might be, that now need to be addressed? How do you address it? What does that look like? The conversations that need to be had, right? Are mm-hmm. there any consequences? I don't know, but it has to be, you know, it just has to be addressed. And so yeah. often it's not, right? It's mm-hmm. overlooked. It's questioned. It's essentially debated into non-existence, right? But most of the time when a Black person is saying something that's anti-Black, it's anti-Black. And it's unfortunate that a Black person has to name that, right? Like, that's just even more labor. It's just more labor. Just tired of this.
Tired, right? Yeah. And like, it shows up in so many spaces. And I think sometimes that's also the, maybe the non-human part of what people think. They're like, you talk mm-hmm. about this, you live this, you talk about whatever.
Yeah.
So now I'm going to disconnect that from your actual lived experience.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, I'm talking about it because I be going through.
Right. And I can see it when it's happening. But and also people relate to us like that's not trauma when it's happening mm-hmm. directly to us. And however your trauma response to something, it's going to show up that way too. So your trauma mm-hmm. response may be to not talk about it, maybe to keep to yourself, maybe to protect yourself, maybe to forget it happened, whatever. Your brain, I've learned the brain is very, very powerful. More than just sending all the hormone signals and telling us to eat and telling us to sleep. Like, it's also protecting us too.
I can definitely vibe with that, especially as a person who was like, one of my friends are, a lot of my friends and people just like that are in my space. One of the things that I think I struggle with is being too humble. And, you know, I think like there's many reasons for that, right? Like, I think yeah. it's like historical,
yeah,
like generational trauma type shit.
Yeah.
I think also like, you know, being around Black femmes who are like from the South.
Yeah.
And like, you know, growing up in those ways.
Yeah.
And I think like it's something that I'm moving through really as like a practice of my liberation, where I'm like, hey, actually I'm good at this, or hey, yeah. actually I did this, or hey, actually this is what my contribution did to this, or whatever it is, or yeah. actually like I'm a bad bitch, whatever it is. But I feel like it's something that like has become a part of my like daily liberation practice. And it's mm-hmm. hard sometimes. Hard because I think also as a Black femme, I've also just been like inherently taught to care for everyone around me. Right. Yep. And so with that like humility brings in this like passiveness
yep.
that people accept as, okay, her generosity is a standard. And it's like, no, actually no. So now I'm like going through this phase of like, how do I move through being really aware of like what I bring into spaces and like who I am and the greatness that's with me, and also hold space for the community, but also hold space for my own feelings
mm-hmm.
because that's part of my liberation. But it's just something that I struggle with. So I don't know how you feel about that, but like, it's just something that I'm working on.
What you're talking about is the mammification of us, how people treat us like mammies and expect to be held emotionally, socially, sometimes financially. People will just essentially like dump on us and be like, oh my God, you're so generous and you're always show up for me and you always are there for me. And yeah, because I'm fucking conditioned to. It's not necessarily my choice. And that was a big part of me coming into identifying as non-binary, is because this assumption that I'm going to just do that, I needed for myself a new marker, a reminder that I don't have, mm-hmm. and that I don't have to show up for people in those ways. And I get to be selfish and focus on myself and not hold emotional space. And, you know, it's hard. It's really, really hard. When my friends text me about all the things they have going on, I'm like, I'm there. Like, I'm showing up. Like, I'm ready to text right back. But sometimes I have to really practice to leave things on read, to get back to it later, to, you know, take some time for myself. Like, it's hard. It's really, really hard.
This is like, it's like the programming. It's like, we're fucking up. What's go- like a glitch in the system. Like,
it feels different. Like, it feels like a state change to not be there. Like, and to not show up for people. That's hard. Yeah.
And then I guess it's also hard when, at least for me, when I, some people can accept that, right? Like, oh, go take care of yourself. Go do what you gotta do, whatever. But also some people are like, nah, like, you owe this to me. I'm like, why do you think I have the capacity for that to begin with? Like, why? I'm trying to take care of myself. I'm trying to take care of these two children of mine. You know, like, I'm here for my family in the ways that I feel like I have to be present for them or want to be present.
Yeah.
And just like, it's a lot going on in the world. Why do I owe anyone anything?
Yeah.
You know, so it's been like a pattern of like, my Michelle, my mentor, is like, everyone deserves to get themselves to the more free place, right? Including you. And like, you don't have to hold space for everyone else all the time.
Yeah.
You don't have to be the place where people lay, I want this, I want that, or, you know, this, that. Like, you don't have to be that space. And it's been very different to really practice that intentionally.
Yeah.
It's uncomfortable.
Right there with you. Right there with you. Because we've been doing it for so long. And we watch our moms and our grandmas and our aunties do it as well, you know, to stop. I mean, the amount of hours that my mom would spend on the phone was like, it wasn't no text message then. Like, it was just talking on the phone, right? It was just I had to get a second line. Well, one, because I wanted one, but she would always be on the phone just like this, you know, holding the phone up with her, essentially with her shoulder. And, you know, my mom would complain and she would say, I had chemotherapy today. I just supported, you know, my friend with something. And they didn't even ask me how chemo was or how I'm doing. And it's that I think about that. Like, I think about the fact that I'm 13 and she's telling me that, you know, and she's frustrated by that, you know, and there's that, you know, I'm just going to take and take and take and take from you until you are depleted. And I don't actually care, because you aren't supposed to have anything anyway. You're just supposed to be of service to me.
So much.
The levels of work and the levels of damage that white supremacy has done, that is why it's a lifetime of undoing. Nobody going into any course, even my workshops, people, I'm like, do not leave here and be like, oh yeah, I'm anti-racist because I did a workshop with Eric. Absolutely not. Like, you have so much work to do, period. When you walked in here and when you leave here, it doesn't end.
It doesn't end for anybody.
No, it doesn't.
Like you said, like, anti-blackness is also present in, in black people.
Yes.
Like, it's also present in every level of what we do. Like, white supremacy is present in everybody and whatever levels that it presents itself. Yeah. Like, it's constantly an undoing and awareness thing that we have to be doing.
Yeah.
So I have a question for you specifically when it comes to this work, and it's like work that we're seeing that people have to constantly be doing. Like, what... And I mean, obviously it can look like different things, but like, when you think about people consciously doing the work to really trust Black people or to get us, you know, to not see us as people of service, right? Whatever those things are, what do you think that work actually includes?
I think it looks like thinking about the ways, one, I think it looks like looking at how the institution of slavery operated and how those themes are still very present in our society, how they show up, this idea that, you know, wet nurses existed, you know, and if you've been, I don't know if this is happening in other major cities, but if you go to wealthy neighborhoods in Brooklyn or the Upper East Side in Manhattan, you see Black women pushing white baby. I mean, we haven't moved away from that too much, right? There's plenty of white nannies, right? But for some reason, what we see in large numbers are Black immigrants mostly who are essentially getting below whatever they should be paid from these white parents. and they are the person that's there for them all the time. But playgrounds in the middle of the day are full of Black femmes, even mm-hmm. in neighborhoods where Black femmes do not live, right, for the mm-hmm. most part. So looking at how those themes from slavery are carried forward, how the social themes of that, how they haven't gone away, how they're written into structures, and really studying that and showing how and looking at how it shows up for you personally and not thinking that it doesn't. I think that's the work, is like, do not think for one second, just because me, myself, I'll use myself as an example, because I have a disability that I'm not able. I still have my own shit to work through in terms of ableism, my own calling myself out, my own looking at, you know, my partner and I are about to buy a house potentially, and we're considering, like, is this home accessible? Like, for mm-hmm. if something were to happen with us, we both are relatively able-bodied, and if we, for something were to happen, how would we get into this home, right? How would we access this? But also for our friends that are not able-bodied, how will they visit, right? Mm-hmm. How will they access this space? Like, thinking about that, right? Things that institutions do not even consider, right? Constantly pushing yourself to think about it, even when you don't, I think is the work I do. And in yeah. real time, being called out too, like being called out for getting it wrong. And I think that's the thing, is so many people want to move away from getting it wrong and want to get it right. And they're so freaked out by having it wrong. And it's like, you're gonna get it wrong. Mm-hmm. Like, you're gonna harm somebody. Like, we live all in a time. Very harmful society, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if you are in a position of power, you're going to harm somebody, right? You have a privilege in a particular area, you likely are gonna cause harm in some way, shape, or form throughout your lifespan, right? Like, mm-hmm. it's gonna be something. So it's important to just acknowledge where you fucked up and how you are going to move on from it, the work that you're going to be doing. But you also don't have to wait until you fuck. You get to actually look at how our structures are and do work from there. Like, just don't be a, I want to say don't be a fool, but I don't know if that's, I think that's just A-V-E. I don't think that's ableist. So a lot of people are like, oh, we're in a different age and everybody's coming out as trans and non-binary and this is a different world now. No, it isn't.
It's the same.
No, it isn't.
People have been trans and non-binary.
Right. No, they've been trans and non-binary forever. And also, you can't even exist as a trans and non-binary person without fucking being harmed for the most part. So it's not a different world. Mm-hmm. Visibility does not equal liberation, right? So
I love that. That's, visibility doesn't equal liberation.
No.
Mm-mm. Yeah, that would definitely bring a point when we're talking about Black liberation. And I think the perception that because there are more Black people visible, and because there are specifically more Black femmes visible, mm-hmm. that like liberation is just happening everywhere. Like, it's just like, ooh, everything's happening.
Yeah.
And it's not true. It's not true. And I, you know, my hope for folks is like, you know, as they, you know, maneuver through my work and my presence and whatever I got going on, is that they see me like as a human. And I think like a bit of that humility, when I think about it, has been my attempt at wanting to be humanized, right? So like, instead of being like, oh, I'm really great at this, I'm like, hey, I make mistakes too.
Yeah.
Or I'm like, hey, I'm not perfect. Even when people are trying to give me my kudos, right?
Yeah.
I'm like, hey, well, that's, I love that. But also like, I'm learning too, right? And like, definitely what I'm taking from this conversation is, or at least some of what I'm taking from my personal self, is like, there's humility. And I think that is to be worked when it needs to be worked. But there's also humility at the fault of myself, right? And I think a lot of specifically Black femmes are in that process of kind of creating this humility to be seen as human, right? But as they do that, getting further away from their liberation. So finding the space between that. So yeah, I knew how, like, when I talked to you.
Yeah, you already know.
And my question to you is like, how do I or we or whoever's listening to this, how do we best support your liberation and you? You know, I'm a doula. I always ask you every time we're in a space together. I'm always like, so what do we need to do for you?
So I think just working, like people just ridding themselves of their inherited thoughts that they've carried from white supremacy, but also just be great to people and treat them how they want to be treated, not how you think they need to be treated. And special attention, special care for the most marginalized is what would help me, right? Because that's, to me, I'm like, can that be trickle down? Can the care of people be trickle down? Can that be something that if you someone else feels that, then someone else is spreading it. Like, I don't know. I'm into that.
For real. I recently was having a conversation with one of my friends, Angelique. And like, I'm like, first of all, they do a lot of like work around like transformative justice and they're a great person. I actually should probably do a podcast with them. So we're talking or whatever. And I know that this is like work that they do, right? So I'm like, from the very beginning of the conversation, I was like, listen, I will pay you for this, right? Because I also feel like Black femmes do shit like that too. We like, this your job? Okay, let's agree upon that before I start just spewing shit at you, right? So anyway, so I was talking to them and we, you know, went through the conversation or whatever. It was a good conversation. You know, they're giving feedback, we're going back and forth, da-da-da, whatever.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the conversation, they were like, listen, Xavier, like, I don't want to take your money. Like, I know that you're offering and you're willing to pay and you're ready to send this, you know, money over, but I don't want your money. And it was like, and the reason for that is because I feel like right now you need to receive care. And if receiving care is this conversation, if I can contribute to your care in that way, I just want to contribute in that way because I hear what you're saying and I see how you're feeling.
Yeah.
And I feel like the best thing that I could do for you outside of listening is just giving you some care. And I was like, and it also brought me back to what you said about like your mom, right? Being on the phone and how like how we communicate through and how that feels like care so heavily, I think, for Black people in general, right? Like for Black people specifically. And I just remember just like receiving that care and being like, yo, this is supporting me. It's supporting the work that I do. It's supporting my liberation. And it also was something that I didn't even really know that I needed at the time. Right. And it's like, that's what I would like to see people do, especially for Black femmes specifically. And Black liberation is like just giving care and it not being something that is so opportunistic or so so fleeting or so momentary. Like, I'm gonna give you care until this.
Yeah.
Oh, I put you in this place, so then I'm gonna stop it here. That's just like, I guess what the work is.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
Well, on that note, I feel like we have some things. I could talk to you forever. You already know what it is.
Same.
You already know what it is. And you know, when you come down here, I told you, tell me when.
Yes.
I need a nice hug.
Embrace.
Hugging Black people
is the best medicine.
Oh my God. Like, it's just like, yes, let's just embrace. And then let me tell you how beautiful you are.
Yes.
And how great you look. And while your hair is amazing. Last but not least, how can people reach you? How can they learn more about your work?
People can find me at Instagram at iHeartErica. That's iHeartErica. And that is also on Twitter. And yeah, you can email me too, I guess. But usually DMs were fine. I usually answer most of them.
That's so great. I had to kind of like the DM game.
No, it's a good idea to take off. I think taking breaks from it is good.
All right. I love you so much.
I love you too.
Your time and your wisdom and just who you are.
Thank you.